stealing babies, nursing home ratings, and another look at California nurse staffing. Plus, we're also going to cover a few common HIPAA myths. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to The Nursing Show. This is our first episode in the new year, and I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. I know we have a whole lot of new listeners. We always pick up a lot of new listeners over the holiday break, and so I want to welcome everybody to the new year and welcome everybody here to The Nursing Show. If you have any suggestions, comments, or corrections, or want more information on anything covered in any of the episodes, you'll want to make sure to head over regularly and check out the Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com. While you're over there, you'll find links to all the things talked about in every episode, plus other articles, links, and good information for nurses available for you over at the Nursing Show site. So you want to make sure you check in there frequently throughout the course of each week. You also have an opportunity while you're there to sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter. You'll find the information asking for just your name and email address, and then you'll be signed up to get all of those show notes and information sent directly to you every week in the Nursing Show's newsletter. A great way to remind you that the Nursing Show's new episode is out there and available for you. If you'd like to contact us here by email, you can do so. Send us your questions, comments, suggestions, and yes, corrections. All of that coming in here to email at comments@nursingshow.com. If you're also looking for some excellent nursing forums, a way to ask questions and get those questions answered in an open setting, you can head over and check out our forums partners, allnurses.com, an excellent, excellent resource with just specialists in every area of nursing and a great community there. So I'm happy to announce that we are going to be partnering with allnurses.com to provide forums for the Nursing Show. So you can head over there and check out and get your questions answered in that great community. While I'm at it, I want to remind you that The Nursing Show is a member of the ProMed Network. That's promednetwork.com, your resource for quality medical podcasts of all types and varieties. promednetwork.com. I'll lead off the news this week with a look at a story I found coming out of Nashville, Tennessee. Police there say that they recently arrested a woman who was dressed like a nurse. I don't say if that's scrubs or what, but I've got to assume just wearing normal scrubs, entered a hospital maternity room and tried to leave with someone else's baby. They said that the charges will be pending against the woman who is currently in custody. She entered the room on this past Wednesday wearing medical scrubs and said she needed to check the baby's temperature. Police said that she triggered security measures when she tried to leave with the baby, and the room and the floor was locked down. The newborn was handed over to a doctor. The woman has been on bond after being arrested on Monday and charged with stealing baby furniture and paraphernalia from an area Walmart. It's great news that this woman was stopped, that the child was not removed from the hospital. But it also points out to me that as we enter the new year, it's a great time for all of us to familiarize ourselves with our individual facilities code system and emergency procedures for certain situations, including situations where we have maternity lockdowns for attempted child abductions. This is something that every facility handles differently, and depending on where you are in the hospital, it may necessitate you to do different things, whether it's to position yourself in a stairwell to observe for someone leaving the building or attempting to leave the building by not normal means, not taking the elevator. So we need to keep an eye on these types of things and familiarize ourselves with them from time to time, because obviously the nurses and the other personnel in the maternity areas and the labor and delivery areas are very familiar with how these procedures work, with security measures protecting mother and baby, but are the rest of us as familiar with them? And so it's something that this time of year is a good time to review how your facility handles things like this, how your facility handles problems like a hazardous materials release, problems such as a fire, problems such as an earthquake if your area is prone to those types of things, or any other emergency situation that might encounter you might encounter in your facility. So again, it's good news to hear that this particular situation was diffused, but it certainly points out the need for all of us to be prepared for the unexpected to happen in whatever our capacity might be. Moving right along, there's a story coming out of California that has the University of California nurses threatening to strike after they have had issues with the way the University of California medical system is handling nurse staffing, in spite of California's nurse staffing law that has really been in the vanguard of the movement to have nurse staffing laws in place in different states. So I talked about this probably about this time last year, as California was rolling out its final year of phasing in the new standards for nurse-to-patient ratios in different units. And we talked about that. In fact, I interviewed a member of California's, the California Nursing Association, who is the primary union involved with initiating and getting that law passed. And there's been some history of looking at this on the nursing show. And so I'm interested because it seems as if, according to this article and according to allegations from the nurses who work for the University of California, that there has been some disregard for the standing of the law and the way the law is worded. And of course, these are labor disputes. There's always two sides to every issue. But I wonder, it's interesting, at least California has a law to fall back on. As far as I know, they're the only state currently that has a nurse staffing law. Other states that have considered them, including Maryland, where I live, have pretty much pushed them to the back burner, trying to look for other means to enable patient safety and still have give the hospitals the ability to have their own nurse staffing policies. So I guess part of me says, hey, at least you've got a nurse staffing law to fall back on and to back you up when you have issues. But I wonder how many other states are going to enact similar legislation in the coming year. Do you feel your facility adequately protects patient safety when dealing with staffing and nurses? Or do you side with those who say that it's difficult to staff with adequate nurses based on the workplace environment? Something that I think we should all kind of keep an eye on and remember that this is something that's near and dear to our hearts. Pay attention to the Nursing Show blog in the coming weeks. I'll be pointing out some links where you can get involved with getting your voice heard about healthcare issues. The incoming presidential administration with President-elect Barack Obama has put out a call that he's going to be holding town hall meetings in communities around the country with his policymakers to get information and get an idea of the needs of the community for healthcare issues. And certainly nurse staffing and safe patient care is one of those issues. So I urge you to become involved and check back with the Nursing Show site frequently. I'll be trying to apprise you of how you can get involved with that initiative and make Washington aware of how to better improve the way we give healthcare to our patients as a nation, but also locally. So take a look at that and keep in touch. We'll have more information as it comes about. Finally, I found an interesting article that cropped up as well. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the CMS system that administers those Medicare and Medicaid payment programs, has instituted a quality rating system for the nation's 15,800 nursing homes that do indeed participate and bill Medicare or Medicaid, which has got to be most of them, if not all of them. Facilities are assigned a star rating from 1 to 5 stars, 1 being low and 5 being high, based on things like health inspection surveys, staffing information, quality care measures, those things that are going to be available. And then this is posted publicly for patients and their families to look at and decide on, make an informed decision about the quality of the nursing care they're going to receive in a given facility. So this is obviously a groundbreaking program, and I wonder if it's going to be moved into other healthcare facilities such as hospitals and other outpatient care and outpatient surgical settings. Obviously, that would be something that would be very important to know. And I know that rating of our medical providers has been a long-standing issue for physicians, and understanding how disciplinary measures are taken and kept private. And same is true for nurses and those nurses that are involved in disciplinary measures. So we need to make sure that we have access to this information for our patient's safety and our patient's quality and consumer questions. But I wonder if this is going to expand further as the Medicare system looks to push this into other facilities. It'll be interesting to see. For this week's tip and trick of the week, I actually got the idea from a comment left over at the Nursing Show site on a recent episode. I had one of the listeners comment in about a news story I had covered talking about how emergency room overcrowding in one hospital had forced them to put patients in the hallways, at least initially on the med-surg floor, until a regular room could be provided for them. And I believe I was just commenting on the fact that I've seen that happen or something similar to that happen. And why is the ER the only place that patients can be put in hallways on beds where they can't be given private care in a room? One of the issues that the nurse brought up in the comment, and I, first of all, I value all comments, and I think that many of the comments she made were right on target. But one of the things she said led me to believe that maybe she didn't have a real strong understanding of some of the ways that HIPAA affects us, both positively and negatively. When she made a comment that you can't have patients in the hallway because you can't talk to them or get any patient information or history from them because it would be a HIPAA violation to do so in such a public area. So I thought I would use this opportunity to kind of debunk a few common HIPAA myths not only held by the public themselves, but by many people in the healthcare setting, people who should probably have a better handle on this, to protect themselves and protect their facilities, as well as protecting the privacy of their patients without impacting adequate and safe care for that patient. As always, I have a lot of linked resources in the show notes for this. I am not an attorney. My experience with HIPAA, however, has been that I have been the privacy officer for a long time, off and on, in my own setting as a paramedic in my past, and have understood and really dealt with a lot of these issues in a setting that is much more public than any hospital facility can be. And before you say, well, yeah, but it's not a hospital facility, it doesn't translate, it actually does translate, and we'll talk about that here briefly. So let's look at some of these more common myths. One of the biggest things I hear is that you can't share patient information, health information, with any other provider, especially those that may not be initially part of your medical and facility system. HIPAA specifically provides the ability for you to share healthcare information with anyone that would be in the chain of care for that patient. You obviously want to limit it to information that is relevant to the care that that person is providing, but you don't want to limit access to the point that they can't provide care for the patient. So in effect, you should be providing pretty much open access. For instance, you send someone to another area of the hospital for a test, and they are transported there by patient services. Most hospitals I know send the complete patient chart with that patient. What if something were to happen to that patient along the way? Having access to their medical records with them is very important in order to provide care for that patient. Should they code on the way, should some adverse reaction to, say, let's say a chemical dye used for a CT scan. Obviously, patient medical records have to go with the patient. You don't limit the amount of records that go with them just because they're going to another area of your hospital. The same is true for transferring that patient to another hospital. Obviously, they need access to those records, and those people involved in transporting that patient need to have full access to those records. And that may well include billing information as well. Don't seal information inside an envelope and assume that you have knowledge of what type of information the transport team, whether they're inside your facility or outside your facility, will need, because they may need to look up patient medications and other information beyond the basic face sheet. Another common myth that I have heard, and this cropped up in that comment, was that how do you prevent sharing patient information unless you have a completely private situation in which to share it? If you have patients on a bed in the hallway, how do you interview that patient and provide them good care if you have to worry about someone in a neighboring bed in the hallway overhearing your conversation? Well, that type of incidental contact with patient information is allowed under HIPAA, and that's because this is considered incidental. If someone is in your facility and they happen to walk by a room and hear someone say something, that's an incidental contact. And if you are in a situation where there are no additional rooms and you have to deal with patient care there on a bed in the hallway, well, obviously there isn't another easy recourse. Now, if you need to have a conversation with that patient that is more private in nature as far as personal concerns that the patient might have, you may want to arrange to move a patient out of a room and put this one in that room temporarily to deal with those issues. But just by itself, being in the hallway and in a public area does not automatically violate HIPAA regulations if you have no other easy recourse. We have patients sharing rooms all the time, and you don't move the patient out of the room when you come in to tell a patient about test results or talk to the patient and assess that patient. You don't worry about the fact that their roommate's right next door through the curtain. You have to do what you have to do. Now, you don't shout the information, but you do what you have to do to get your job done. And HIPAA in no way is meant to keep you from doing your job, from providing patient care in the setting in which you find yourself. Obviously, facilities have taken steps to protect patient information. We've removed easy-to-read patient information from things like whiteboards, where we have unit information out there. We still use whiteboards in a lot of facilities, but we have found a way to do so without divulging protected patient-specific information. We have protected access to things like fax machines. We put the fax machine in an area where only personnel who have a reason to get that information have access to it. This is the type of thing that you do. So if you have a situation where your ER is jammed to the gills and they're starting to send stable patients up for you to board in the hallways until you can clear space in your med-surg rooms, perhaps it's time to set up a triage area for you to use to get the initial information from your patient at, say, let's say one end of the floor near a stairwell where no one is likely to travel, and then move the patient into the place on the floor where you're going to keep them longer term. And then when you have a room appropriately available, you move them in there. But when you have no other recourse, HIPAA does not keep you from providing patient care in awkward and unusual situations, as long as you're taking some kind of reasonable precautions. So you don't shout the patient's information from one end of the hallway to the clerk at the nurse's station. You gather that information as discreetly as possible with a normal tone of voice in order to make yourself heard and in order to hear what the patient is saying. Another common myth, and we'll kind of wrap up with this one, is that you can't share information with patient family members about their care at all unless you've specifically asked the patient about that first. Well, this is allowed for in HIPAA because these family members, in the circumstances to which you're talking to them, may be included in that chain of healthcare. In other words, the patient has come into the emergency department, transferred to your floor, you've treated and taken care of that patient for several days, now they're going home. Obviously, the family members that are there to take that patient home are probably part of the patient's healthcare team. You can ask questions about that, but you should provide all necessary information to the members of the patient's family that are going to be involved in helping them to recover fully at home so that they can be fully informed and be part of that healthcare team so that the patient doesn't have to be relying on their own memory and abilities to take care of themselves if they have these other resources available. It would, again, negatively impact patient care if they were expected to instruct their family members on proper dressing and wound care, or perhaps instruct their family members on information about follow-up appointments from their memory alone. This is something where family members should indeed be involved because this, again, makes sure that the continuity of care continues as much as possible. I'm sure there are other concerns out there, other situations that you've run into. Make sure you let us know about them here. Let us know at the Nursing Show site. You can leave a comment for the show notes on this particular episode, or you can also send us an email, as always, to comments@nursingshow.com and let us know about your questions, comments, or suggestions about patient privacy and HIPAA management. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to, again, remind all of you that you can find links to everything I've talked about in these show notes over at the website nursingshow.com in the show notes for this episode. And it's your job to follow up on the general information presented here. Even in something as simple as this HIPAA discussion, I have several links to similar questions on HIPAA myths and additional documents and information for you to review HIPAA. You should also have excellent information available to you in your own facilities in most cases. So follow up and get your questions answered because we want to provide the best possible patient care and not let HIPAA stand in the way when we make a mistake and err in judgment about what HIPAA actually covers and how it affects patient care. If you'd like to leave a comment or a suggestion on the show, you can certainly do so a couple of different ways. There is a comments link at the bottom of every post at the Nursing Show website, so you can comment on any of the articles and information there. You can also send me an email. That goes into comments@nursingshow.com, and I welcome hearing all of your comments and suggestions as a way to continue to produce a news program and tip program here on the Nursing Show that you want to hear and give you the information you're looking for. That's it for me. I'm going to wrap up the show with some great PodSafe music, as I always do. We're going to visit our friend Matthew Ebel again and play his song, Downtown. If you like what you hear, you'll find a link in the show notes to Matthew's site. Let him know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. Okay, wrapping up, I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. I'll be back again next week, but until then, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
country girl still want to roam, cause the bright lights of the city at night will rain down like a curse on a small town. The music swinging and bringing the pretty girls, some of the fellas will get up and get out and get on the train going downtown. Take me downtown. Sally couldn't see a future past the end of her nose. She set out for the stars with some pumps and a bag full of clothes. Set her sights on the lights and the action of the shows. But Sally never made it to the road. Now he dropped the legs, but he's looking for sex. A cheap whiskey in a bag for the happiness. He'll suck you in with a sinister grin, a stick pin and a spin that you're gonna win if you go downtown. Hell, he gives you money, but honey, your daddy don't give a damn unless you got it.